runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show 1051, Security Features of PowerShell 7 with guest Mike O'Neill. Recorded Thursday, July 9th, 2026. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on X at x.com/runasradio.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back, after entirely too long of a time, my friend Mike O'Neill, who endeavors to empower engineers as much as possible with sharing of information and overall IT knowledge. And he's currently a Microsoft Cloud Solution Architect focusing on PowerShell, MS Graph API, and Exchange, with ongoing delivers on all PowerShell workshops, Exchange, and MS Graph API content. He's continually looking for new methods to help improve IT engineers' efficiency and knowledge about PowerShell, Microsoft Graph, and Exchange. And he occasionally posts on his blog at mikeoneill.blog and also does the Exchange add-in PowerShell module at mikeoneill.blog/exchange_add-in from time to time. Not since 2018, my friend. Like, that's too long. Where have you been?
It's been a hot minute, huh?
You were still a PFE when we last talked. And to be clear, the premier field engineer, I thought, was the very best job at Microsoft and always consistently one of the best guests on Run As Radio, because you guys did the real work.
Well, thank you. And I love the role. Oddly enough, they just changed my title.
Oh.
I actually do the exact same thing.
Yeah. It sounds like it. So,
and I've just had my 15th anniversary here, 15 years at Microsoft.
Congratulations.
So pretty excited. Well, thank you. Yes.
They give you a crystal thing, right?
Something like that. Yeah, you get a choice, right? So whether you get a crystal or a little extra money or something like that. So I forget what I did. Probably the money. Otherwise, it would collect dust in the corner, right?
I don't know. Some of those crystals, I think the 20 year is the really pretty one. I've seen a few of them. But yeah, you know, you got to celebrate one way or the other. But I'm glad to hear you're doing the same job, because that whole idea of just being out in the field helping customers with those problems, for me, you know, as a consumer of Run As much as the creator of Run As, it was like, oh, you've dealt with a way bigger version of this problem than I'm ever going to deal with, so I know I'm okay. Like, you can do it. You know, they've had those conversations like, well, we had 300,000 AD accounts to migrate. It's like, well, good. My 100's not a big deal then.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, a few months ago, right, October 14th, 2025, the Exchange deadline.
Yeah.
So basically, plus or minus 3 months on either side, hundreds of customers saying, hey, we got to get off 2013 and 2016.
Yeah. It's like, wait, you're running 2013 and 2025? What are you doing?
Yeah, well, we all ran into some 2010 customers still. So
wow, that's impressive.
I mean, it's Exchange.
Yeah.
You know, a message comes in, it goes to EDB file, and it goes out.
And it goes out. It's not a big deal. Well,
it's not a big deal.
And we're still living in the permanent hybrid world. If you have migrated up to M365, and you probably have. I mean, most folks I talk to these days, but they still have like that one lone Exchange server hanging around.
Right. Well, up until just recently, right, the product group said you couldn't get rid of it.
Yeah.
And now they could. And then we had another problem with groups and memberships and Exchange Online authoritative mailboxes versus Active Directory authoritative. So they've solved all those problems, and exciting about that. But there's still customers that have not even started their cloud journey yet.
Wow. That's cool. Yeah. Kind of cool too, because, you know, there is a strength to being last in this, because the migration tools are way better. The landing system is way better. The workflows, like, you definitely have a better plan now about what it takes to getting moved into the cloud for any given company.
Oh, totally. With all the things that we've learned and improved year after year, and new versions of PowerShell, and now Graph can do certain things. So always making changes and improvement, right? That's what IT is about, making it better.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I've done this show already. I think it was at PowerShell 7.3 where we said, okay, we're at feature parity with 5 now, plus being cross-platform open source. Like, you're really running out of excuses not to move up to the new version.
Well, the biggest pushback, oddly enough, was the security teams.
Oh, interesting.
They said, if it's not in box in Windows, you can't load it. And so Windows PowerShell 5.1 was the standard de facto because it's installed in server, 2019, 2022, 25, and so forth. And for a while, it looked like there was not going to be a change on that.
Wow.
Because the PowerShell product group went to the Windows product group and said, hey, we would like to ship our product in yours. And the Windows product group said, we would love that. Does it have 10-year support? And we said, no, PowerShell is built on .NET Core with 18 to 36 months.
Right.
So all of a sudden, we're looking at Windows Server 2028, 31, 34, 37, Windows Server 2040. Is Mike crazy? Well, that's a different topic. I don't know if we're going to get a Windows Server 2040, but we were looking at having Windows PowerShell 5.1 with no new features.
Right.
However, they just came to an agreement in June. Just last month of what this recording, right? So last month in June, they are now going to ship PowerShell inside of Windows Server.
Finally.
And so all the stuff we're going to get. So we're happy about that because all the cool new things that we get with the functionality for each loops, parallel processes and so forth. And the clean block we'll talk about a little bit later, which is exciting. You know, we get all these GIA, just enough administration things now for Linux engineers. And for Windows engineers and so forth. So there's a lot of cool functionality coming.
Yeah, no, and it's really exciting. And it's interesting to think about your security practices around Linux boxes, because of course, folks are living in both worlds all the time now. Like, I mean, the conversation I have with sysadmins operating in Azure, it's like when I run those apps on Linux through .NET versus Windows and .NET, I just save 20%. Like, there's no debate after that. It's like, oh, it's over. The CFO would kill me otherwise, but it does mean you need to administer them.
Correct. Yeah. And they have one platform, right? So yeah. All verb nouns the same across the board, which has been the goal from PowerShell to be ubiquitous across all the platforms. So I don't have to learn new technologies as I go from server to server. And I don't care what's underneath the operating system. As long as I can run my commands and scripts, and I'm all happy to play.
And expect the same things to happen, for sure. It is interesting to get into a mindset where it's like, I don't even need to know what the operating system is. I can still administer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, cloud versus on-premises, right? I mean, yeah, where's the box? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. And I don't care. Like, it's not actually important. I have other things to worry about. Just get the work done.
You don't want to change out the battery of a 3U server at the top of the rack, a BIOS battery, and hope it doesn't fall on your head?
You're giving me flashbacks, man. You're giving me flashbacks. Or just trying to find that machine in the cages.
Right.
Like, where is that machine?
Oh, yeah. I remember the back in the day. But now it's all virtual, right? We're all elevated so that we're just doing DevOps work. All the sysadmins are now DevOps engineers because the servers aren't under their desks anymore.
Well, and speaking of that just enough administration also, we're at that place where I also only, you know, not only am I doing that work in a script, I'm doing it in a script where it elevates for the permission set for that work, does the work, and then drops you back down again. Like, more and more, we just don't we don't use super user accounts at all. They're break glass accounts.
Correct.
Right? I've got granulated security for all of that work.
Yeah, and that's what I love about this GIA. And then from a standpoint of PowerShell, it's a PSSC file. So a PowerShell session configuration file.
Right.
And I love talking about the PSSC files because there are so many granularity things. People say, oh, I need to be a local admin to that box. No, you don't.
No.
What do you mean I don't need to? And it always goes back to people trying to run, like you said, the PS1 files, the execution policy. Oh, no, I'm being restricted from the execution policy. Well, just because you're trying to run F5 either in ISC or Visual Studio Code and run the file, you may get denied from that. Mm-hmm. But there's a workaround. And the workaround is just Control-A, select all the code, and then run the selected code, which would be F8 in either of those applications.
Right.
And it's funny because you're not running the script. You're running the code in the script.
Subtle.
Exactly. And the security people freak. They're like, oh my gosh, you have a workaround? I'm like, yeah, we have a workaround because we can interactive the code. However, this is where GIA comes in with this session configuration file, is then you can go restrict what actual commandlets and code you can actually run.
Right.
And that's what I love about this. I mean, you can run what's the commandlet here? The commandlet of new PS session configuration file.
Right.
There's a dash full switch. And I totally tell everybody, said, you should light this up, do a dash full, because it'll actually do a PSSC file. And it'll show you every single thing you can configure. Things like the transcript directory. You can actually send the transcript directory to a UNC path by default.
Nice.
So when the script logs on, it actually runs into that UNC path and you can log the stuff. You can do virtual accounts. You can set up which commandlets. So instead of doing a git command and getting thousands of commandlets off the machine, whether there's Graph installed or Active Directory or domain controllers or Exchange servers, you can literally tell that session to only run two or three commandlets,
right?
Including putting aliases in there. You can do managed service accounts. You can do role definitions. You can actually define your own environment variables on the fly in the PSSC file. So many people don't know this.
So you can really confine what this script is able to do with the configuration file. This configuration has only these privileges to operate these parts of PowerShell. So if somehow it got lateraled to, like, it just doesn't have access to all of PowerShell then.
100%. And that's the beauty of this PSSC file. Not only can you do it to remote sessions, you can also do it to local sessions.
Right.
And so the local sessions across all platforms can be restricted, just like you said. There's no lateral transition. Mm-hmm. There's no options. You can't jump anywhere. You don't have to be a domain admin on a server or a device. And that script can only run what you tell it, including executables and MSI packages, for example. So Notepad, for example, you could restrict that. You could restrict PowerShell versions. Mm-hmm. You could have parameters, not only the commandlet, you could actually go to the parameter level.
Wow.
So even if you're doing git-process or git-service or something, then you could put the hyphens in for the actual parameter and says this code as this role can only do this commandlet with these parameters.
Right.
Which is where the granularity is so amazing. So many, like you said, the sysadmins are like, well, we're doing the job, but let's put more security in this. Mm-hmm. So again, you can do anything. You can restrict aliases, definitions, script blocks, variables. Oh, the environment variables. So this is always a fun one. Mm-hmm. I have so many jokes, as we all do. Environment variables, right? So $env colon in PowerShell gives us so many options. We get things like program files or computer name, domain DNS. So it's just a built-in. We don't have to know those things. And so there's another one, $env colon OS. When you run that in PowerShell, I'll just ask the question, what my Windows 11 machine, what do you think it says in PowerShell as the OS? Just first thing comes to mind. What do you think?
When you ask OS?
Yeah. So environment variable colon OS in PowerShell. What's the first thing you think it spits out?
The Windows version.
Right. It doesn't.
Which for 11 is 10.1, right?
Yeah, it doesn't. It does Windows underscore NT.
No. No.
Yes.
Wow. 1996 called and wants its version number back.
It's new technology back.
You know, I hear Dave Cutler still working. So, okay. Does it change when he's gone? That's not a useful parameter.
I kid you not.
That's really not a useful parameter.
It's not. No. There are ways of finding which version it is and so forth, but it's just funny when you use environment variable colon OS, it says Windows underscore NT. Yeah. I don't even get to make these jokes up.
No, but I guess you could run this on a Linux box and it would spit back a Linux type of some kind.
Oh, that's a good point. I haven't done that. I don't have a Linux box. I should spin one up and see what it says.
And I wonder if it's granular, like it actually would say Ubuntu, you know, versus any other number of versions, but that's really
Red Hat. Yeah. Macintosh.
Yeah.
OpenSUSE.
Yeah. No, it's possible. But yeah, to see NT come up on the screen in 2026, I would be delighted. Truly. Truly delighted. Like, yes. Now, that's the privilege I need to make one of these configuration files? Because this sounds like a pretty powerful function.
Well, interestingly enough, right, once you create it, and that's what I say, I tell all my engineers that I bump into, said, put it on the screen with the security people there.
Right.
And talk about each and every single one of these. What do you want this script to do? Mm-hmm. And then basically, you do have to register it on a server for a remote session.
Right.
And so obviously, you'd have to be an admin to register it. But then once you have it registered, then you tell your script to create the PowerShell session to that endpoint. It's basically creating more doors of entry.
Right.
And so there's four doors by default, Windows PowerShell, 32-bit, 64-bit, the workflow, and the server has server manager. Client machines have just three of those. They don't have server manager, obviously. Mm-hmm. But you can create a fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth door, however many doors you want. And so you could literally have, like you said, a script or a junior admin run code They're restricted to the one or two, three commandlets that they have access to.
Right.
And that is it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I taught this years ago to a customer, and he had Follow the Sun technology. And he would get a phone call about 4 a.m. in the morning once a week saying, hey, the SharePoint server needs you to log in. You're the admin and run this code. He's like, why can't you run it? We're not local admins.
Right.
And so I told him this. And so he spent the next 3 days of the workshop fixing it in production.
I think I want a tool that after I finish the script and I'm happy with it, spits out a config file with minimum privileges that would run that script.
Exactly. And then let the people do their job around the sun, right? Around the planet and stuff. And so you don't have to have people saying, oh, let's call this person up at 4 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
Because you know what it's like at 4 in the morning, right? You got to get up. You got to walk to the computer, got to log on. Well, now you're awake.
Yeah, yeah. There's going to be cat videos sometime in the immediate future. Like, that's kind of unavoidable.
Exactly. But to be able to allow anybody, junior admins, middle, senior admins, scripts, daemons, processes to be in scope, restricted to run code and not go beyond that is why I love this. Oh, yeah.
This is PowerShell without local admin.
Correct.
Because it's properly confined. That's really awesome. And Mike, I got to interrupt for one moment for these very important messages.
If you've ever built something with Power Platform or wished you understood it better, then you need to know about the Power Platform Community Conference at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, Nevada, October 25th to 30th, 2026. This is the one event every year where the global Power Platform community comes together in one place. Microsoft leadership and engineers, makers, developers, IT pros, architects, and business leaders all learning how to get real results with Power BI, Power Apps, Power Automate, and Copilot. The sessions go beyond slides. You'll see real customer stories, practical demos, hands-on learning, and deep dives you can actually use when you get back to work. And just as important, you'll meet the people behind the tools, the Microsoft product team leaders, MVPs, and community experts who live and breathe this stuff every day. Whether you're just getting started or running Power Platform at scale, this conference will level up how you think and what you build. Listeners to Run As Radio can get a discount on registration by using the code RUNAS at powerplatformconf.com. The Power Platform Community Conference is at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, Nevada, October 25th to 30th, 2026.
And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Mike O'Neill, back after entirely too long, but glad to be talking to you about securing PowerShell. And I'm enamored of these configuration files. This really, you know, talk about just enough administration around all that. But I'm sure there's more.
Yep. There's another exciting thing that I'm totally stoked about. And it's called the clean block.
Okay, so this is in PowerShell?
Clean block. This is PowerShell. So when you, another tip and trick, right? So when you're in ISE, Windows PowerShell ISE, there's a shortcut called Start Snippets, Control J. I remember very few shortcuts, right? Control A, Select All,
right.
CV, Copy, Paste. But Control J is Start Snippets. It's kind of like pre-AI.
Okay.
And so basically, you can go to Advanced Function Complete, and it'll drop in 78 lines of code for you, including all the get help stuff and the start, begin process and end blocks. And so we have a begin process and end block. The begin block is designed to run once, and you could do things like connect to Exchange, connect to SQL, connect up, test machines, and so forth. And then the process block is the one that does all the processes. So maybe it runs 20, 30 minutes, an hour, 5 hours, whatever that is. And then once that block is done, then there's an end block. Now, the end block runs once and it says, hey, I can finish things. You know, you can say, hey, the script is now done. You can move on. You can disconnect from things and so forth. So you have that available in functions and in scripts. Begin, okay, process, and end block. You were mentioning 7.3, which was kind of a
the big version.
Milestone.
Yeah, milestone.
A big version, a little bit ago. We're up to 7.6 now and 7.7's in preview and so forth. But they introduced the clean block, and it's a block below the end block. So typically what people would do is would flush their credentials, like you said, the elevated credentials.
Mm-hmm.
They would disconnect from SQL and Exchange in the end block. But the problem got to be is, what if you hit Control C in the process block? Nothing happened.
Right.
And so this is analogous to the try-catch finally. In a finally block, the Control C actually launches the finally block. So what you want to do is move all those things to the clean block so that if somebody tried to break into your code, right, and try and do something, right, hey, Richard's got a really cool script and it's elevated.
Right.
If I try and break into it, then I can take those credentials and maybe do something with it. Well, what happens, the clean block actually launches with Control C, and therefore it's a security enhancement because now anything in that clean block, disconnect, notify people, flush all the credentials and everything, executes, and then PowerShell becomes available.
Interesting. Okay. And is this a command in PowerShell?
No. Again, it's a clean block. So there's a begin process and end block. And so basically, it's one of those keywords. So when you type in function, it's that dark navy blue in ISE, rather.
Right.
And so the idea is that the begin process and end block, we've had these for years. Mm-hmm. Again, the begin block is this block, again, squirrely brackets, and you can put any code you want in there. And then you have the process block, and then you have the end block that runs once. But now we get a new clean block. And under that is again, squirrely brackets, and you can put anything in the code.
Right.
What's really cool about this is obviously ISE is running Windows PowerShell 5.1. It shows up as the wrong color blue. That's kind of why I like PowerShell, I guess. It's pretty colors, right? You can tell if something's correct right away.
Right.
And so it's actually broken. But if you go to PowerShell 7.3 and above, so you're in Visual Studio Code for something like that or some other editor that supports that, then you actually see it as a block that is available. And so another tip and trick about Visual Studio Code, and this is amazing, is if you select a line of code or block of code, you can hit control and up arrow and down arrow.
Right.
And it'll move the code for you.
The whole block.
The whole block.
Wow. Okay.
Right.
I didn't know it could do that.
So yeah, I want that feature in all my editors, in Outlook and Word. You know, you try and move a paragraph.
Yeah.
You have to select the paragraph.
Cut it.
You have to move the cursor.
Yeah.
Paste
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
No, just select it and control up and arrow, down arrow.
Right.
It's the little things in life that I like.
No, it's smart.
So everything in your end block, again, not everything, most things in your end block, again, if you're going to present, you know, write host, hey, this script is done and so forth, that's fine. But the clean block allows you to go, again, you know, from a security enhancement, if somebody decides to try and break into your script and become elevated to do something, then all the script stuff in the clean block will launch.
Right.
Now, it's interesting. I'd mentioned Control-J and ISE. There is some snippets in Visual Studio Code, for example. The advanced function is only about 18 lines of code.
Okay.
And there's no clean block yet.
All right.
I'm like, we need the clean block. I mean, there's commandlet binding and so forth and begin process and end block, but there's no clean block. So I really hope they update that eventually. So who knows? But yeah, if anybody's ever written a try-catch finally, the finally does the same thing.
Yeah.
The finally will execute if you hit control C, and now the clean block does the exact same thing.
That's really cool.
So I have an engineer here at Microsoft, and he's like, oh, this is amazing. He actually wrote the code to monitor the keyboard like every second, every half a second, to see if somebody was doing keystrokes to try and break in. It took him 50, 60 lines of code. And I said, well, it's all in the clean block now. He's like, thank you.
Interesting.
Okay. But most engineers are like, that's not that big of a deal. I'm like, it's amazing.
Yeah, I know. It's really powerful. And it just it's a whole way to just be more confident that your code's going to be used for what it's for. It can't be hijacked for something else.
Correct. Which, again, goes back to security. Again, a lot of security people say, hey, if it's not in Box and Windows, don't use it.
Right.
Again, you have to be on newer PowerShell. And so I think the security people should be doing the opposite. They should be yelling and screaming at us, you need to be on 7.3 or higher because there's no more security features.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
there's new stuff.
And that's been the usual cadence. You know, we've been having this conversation a lot now about the risk of an unpatched machine is higher than the risk of a bad patch.
Right.
Although now I think we've gotten a little even more sophisticated because of the bad actors going after open source libraries and things. We're saying, yeah, you should run on the latest version, but only if the latest version is at least 48 hours old, so that the good guys have had a chance to see the new update and make sure there's nothing bad going on in there. Like, I think, and I'm appreciating this nuance, right? That it's just, yeah, we have a bunch of security. We have some rules around it. Don't grab the latest thing automatically. Get it a little chance to ripen. But otherwise, newer code better.
Yep.
And it, and definitely, you should run the latest version.
Yeah, there's bleeding edge and what I would call suicidal edge.
Sure. Well, I would think most people would look at the LTS version of PowerShell. Like, if you're of the mind, if you've come from a company with an orientation on only what's in the box, the equivalent is run a long-term supported version then.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's why they do the odd versions, short-term, and the long versions are even numbers. I said that wrong.
Right. So the evens are LTS.
Correct. Yeah. Right. So LTS is even. That's why 7.4 actually have more versions than after 7.5 was introduced, because they kept that going with the stuff. So
yeah, but you definitely, we got to get to the mindset of the update. But, you know, sysadmins are only going to fight security so hard too. Unless they're the same person.
Correct. Right. Yeah. And security the same way. It usually is, right?
Yeah.
But the good news is, for all the people out there that don't know this, is that you, the public, can actually join the PowerShell product group meetings once a month and voice your opinions.
Hmm.
So it's publicly available. So if you go to aka.ms/joinpscall, you can actually join. It's the third Thursday of the month. And it's, let's see, it's 9:30 a.m. Pacific time, 10:30 a.m. Mountain, 11:30 a.m. Central, 12:30 p.m. Eastern. I believe that works out to 5:30 p.m. UTC for all the overseas
Something
people.
Like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, put it on your calendar. If not, you can go to the YouTube channels and watch. Literally, the product group, the PowerShell product group, literally just opens their cameras and just starts talking about stuff.
Sure.
And it's open to the public.
This is the same way the .NET team works, right? Where it's just like, hey, we got to have this meeting anyway, but we'll just make it available if you want to watch it. And then it recorded anyway, so you can watch it post facto.
Exactly. But it's interesting. We don't even have distribution lists for, say, the Exchange product group or the Active Directory product group at Microsoft. I can't reach out to them.
Yeah, yeah.
But the PowerShell product group...
No problem.
I think they open to the public.
I think they got infected by the .NET guy.
Exactly.
Because that sort of move towards open source and doing everything through GitHub, and like that change in workflow included this. We can be publicly visible. You know, the team's distributed. We're using all these services anyway. So if you want to participate, feel free.
Right.
That's really cool.
So many cool options.
Yeah. What else? What am I missing here?
I was just trying to think of what else to talk about. You'd mentioned that I have, I have an Exchange add-in module that I put out there on the planet.
Yeah.
There's a couple of really cool things. The customers come to me and say, or come to us and say, hey, can we do this? I'm like, I don't know. Someone wanted to download the photos from Office 365. So I said, okay, let's create a commandlet. And I put it out there. One of the coolest things, though, was we're trying to expand all of the group memberships. So people are trying to, like you said earlier, trying to move from hybrid to cloud only or on-prem to the cloud. And so people want to know what distribution groups they have. Well, I'd never found any code that went more than one layer deep. Not that it doesn't exist out there on the internet. Other people have probably written it before. But I'd never found it. And so it only expand one layer of the distribution group and memberships and so forth. Because the problem with an email distribution list is that you can have nesting.
Right.
And so, you know, group B can be inside of A, and then group C can be in B. But then you can have a looping error, and inside group C can also include group A.
Oh, yeah.
And so now there's a looping error. And I reached out to, you know, some colleagues, and I was talking about it. And one of my colleagues here, his name's Corey Thatcher, he's like, Mike, I can fix that for you. I'm like, what? What do you mean? And so he actually did. He spent some time with me. Great guy out of Seattle. He fixed it. And so now I actually have it out there that no matter how many nestings and how many looping errors you run into, we basically count the groups, expand what hasn't been expanded, and expand everything and said, here's a list of all the groups and all the memberships for people on the planet to do. Right? Again, this is the power of the community. You know, I have code. Other people have code. Out there, they write their own modules and so forth. That's what I loved about the power of the community, getting together and saying, hey, have you done this? Yeah, have you done this? So just love sharing information out there.
Yeah, for sure. And there's just so much to know, right? Like, we've always had some security in PowerShell, but this, you know, once again, I feel like I've just been reminded of why I should be running 7, because all of these capabilities, they really came in 7.3 plus. And if you haven't seen them, like, they're not going to be retrofitted back to 5.1. Like, these are new, and this is where you're going to find them.
And that's the whole thing, right? The PowerShell product group is moving on. They don't care about 5.1. They will patch it. If they find a security bug or flaw or something, they will patch it. But all the new features, they're on the new stuff.
That's not where features go.
So I'm glad that they finally got together with the Windows product group, and now it's going to ship in box, finally.
Yeah.
Get over that hurdle. Move on.
Yeah, no. I'm glad you guys figured that out. Like, it is, I understand, you know, it's a big company. There's lots of teams, and they all have their rules, and it's challenging to find your way through that. But it sounds like that's resolved, and we're going to see 7 in the box going forward. Thank goodness for that. Just a question of who's upgrading their Exchange, their Windows servers to going to run the latest bits, because we got 2025, but I guess it's too late for it. It's going to have to be the next one.
Well, that's what's interesting. The Windows product group said vNext, which apparently includes the next patch. And I believe it's H2 2026 for Server 2025.
Yeah.
So it's going to happen pretty quick. And again, jokingly, when I said server 2028, right, every 3 years, 2031, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
but every 3 years, we get a new version,
yeah.
It seems like.
But you're right. It'll show up in 26H2 then. And that means if you are running it, I don't know. The great question is, how far is 26H2 going to regress back to? Because it might go back as far as 2019.
Yeah, it could.
I guess we'll find out. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Soon enough, we're going to see in the insider's view, 26H2 has got PowerShell 7.7 or 7.6 in it. So, well, I guess we'll know.
Yep, probably 7.6 is my guess, because that's, like you said, long-term support with...
That's the LTS, yeah.
That's the LTS, yep. Even numbers and so forth.
That's the one I'd pick.
Yep.
Yeah, but I hope they do push 26H2 back as far as 2019, because that would pick up a lot of machines, and you get, and suddenly you'd have it in the box. You'd have a lot of power all of a sudden.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Mike, so much fun to chat with you. This is, I use PowerShell routinely. I don't even think about it, and I have not looked at any of this. So it's like, yeah, I thought I knew. Apparently, I didn't know until my friend Mike showed up.
There's too much in the world to know, but this is why you bring us experts in to hang out with the group here, huh?
Yeah, for sure. Exactly right. Hey, thanks so much for coming back on the show. We got to do this more often, friend. It used to be a routine thing back in the PFE days. It needs to be routine again.
Definitely.
All right. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.